Hey, and welcome back to the Motherhood Unplugged podcast. Today I have Akinyi Ocheng with me, and we're going to be discussing all things sex ed. But before we begin, I just want to thank Ashley Furniture Home Store for sponsoring this podcast. Akinyi, thank you so much for being here with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I think before we get into it, maybe you can just let everybody know what it is that you do. Also about Teen Talk Table.
Okay. Yeah. So I call myself a sexuality educator, mm-hmm. a very foreign term in this space of ours, Kenya especially. Often people ask me, what does that really entail? But in short, it entails I push a culture where people can have sex-positive homes and children are given the space and opportunity to have very healthy sexuality conversations, both sexuality and sex education, within their homes or even the society at large. So not just restricted to a specific setting, but they have a space where they can openly have such conversations and empower them to have healthy sexuality as they grow up, right from childhood, even into adulthood. And so sexuality conversation is not limited to one age. Now, most people ask me about the time.
Yeah.
But it's a lifelong conversation. So it means even right from toddler years into preteens, teenage years and young adult years, we need to be having continuous conversations.
Yeah.
And what led me to start the Teen Talk Table space was because I was doing a lot of community awareness around sex education. But then I realized that I was talking to teenagers who are going back to homes where it's very closed or unsafe to even utter a word around sex itself. So then these teenagers then end up resorting back to their uneducated friends or miseducated friends, or they try to look for information elsewhere around their sexuality.
Yeah.
Internet then was not so big as now.
Yeah.
But now what happens is if you just park that conversation to teenagers themselves, then they go back to the internet because then they go to a home where nobody can respond in a way that they need to respond to.
Yeah.
So that is why I thought it's very important that I plug in parents, I pull the parents along. And so my mantra is very simple. The home is the nature of the child. And therefore, sexuality is about life.
Yeah.
So why not have that as part of our nurturing of the children in the home space?
Amazing. I love it so much. In fact, I think the first time that I heard you speak, and then since then, I've always asked you to, you know, attend my workshop. Please be a guest on the podcast because you had a talk at Crawford, which is where my daughter was before I decided to do homeschooling. And there was a chat that was happening on a Saturday and it was a sex ed chat. And I was so interested because I was like, firstly, amazing that a school is taking the initiative to have this conversation with parents. And I was also very interested to see about what the parents thought about it because, yeah, as you said, growing up in Kenya, you know, this is a very taboo subject. So I was very interested in what that entailed. And we sat through your talk for, I think, was it like an hour or 2 hours?
Yeah.
And the whole room, every single parent, be it Kenyan or anyone from abroad, was just so invested and so interested in what you were saying. And I think the way in which you approached it was, you know, because there are very different cultures that were attending this talk, and also the kids are of different cultures and, you know, backgrounds. So I think the way in which you talked about it was just so interesting because you really appealed to everybody who was sitting there on all our levels, and we all left feeling like, okay, yeah, this is definitely conversations we need to have with our kid. I know I personally went into that conversation already knowing that I want to be very open and honest about these conversations. I knew that I very much know that I want my kids to be educated on sex ed and things like that. So, but I'm aware that other parents are not on the same level. So I thought it was very interesting how you introduced it, and you were talking at parents with very young kids, so 6-year-olds at the time. That was my class. So you said that it's for every age, so how do you start introducing it, what age? And then also, I think, can you touch on the fact that, you know, people are always like, sex ed means that you're letting kids know that it's okay to have sex. That's not what it's about.
It's not about that.
Yeah.
So before I just speak about that, maybe I can just bring it back a little. Is the assumption that sex education is a white man's project, which is very not true. And if you know history and if you understand African history, sex education used to have happen even in our local communities. In fact, when you speak to our great grandmothers or grandmothers, depending on your generation,
yeah,
probably Gen Z will not have that because then their grandmothers were not having this conversation.
Mm.
But then the previous generation were having this conversation, and they were having it in terms of a community engagement where the girls would have it separately,
yeah,
through either taught by an auntie or a grandmother, and then the boys will also have their own den and taught by different people.
Yeah.
The only perspective that was different was that sex ed then, because there were early marriages,
yes,
was mostly preparing those girls for marriage.
Yeah.
So it was kind of limited to that context. And then, of course, the era of AIDS came in and people retracted in.
Yes.
Because now sex had to be demonized because, yeah, it was now what was bringing, what was killing people.
Yes.
But when you look at Africa across, from Kenya and other African countries, especially the West African countries,
yes,
they have a lot of sex education going on, even currently.
Yeah.
We see, for example, clitoral orgasm education is very huge in puberty years,
okay,
in the West African countries.
Yeah.
And that can tell you the scope that they've had that the conversations around it. So it's not a white man's problem, so we have to demystify that.
Mm.
And of course, maybe because of the era of the sexual orientation coming in, then, yes, people really think that this is a very white man's project.
Yeah.
But now coming back to what sex education really is, and to help then parents see that, then why do I need to start speaking early, is because, yes, sex ed is just a part of sex intercourse is just a part of sexuality conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because as human beings, when you're born, the first thing that you're differentiated with any living being,
yes,
be it a plant or animal, you're differentiated by your sex.
Mm-hmm.
You're either male or you're female.
Yeah.
And so what happens then is then you see that people are born sexual.
Mm.
And so sexuality is about life. It's about everything that affects you as a sexual being, be it your mind, be it your emotions, be, yes, it your body, be it your surrounding.
Yes.
And so you see human beings, then it means you have your brain, you have your emotions, your surrounding, your first relationship that you encounter as a human being is the family relationship.
Yeah.
Before even you go to friendship, when, mm-hmm, you start going to school.
Yeah.
And then you progress into romantic relationships. So there's a transition, because how you relate within your family will determine how you relate with your friends and how, mm-hmm, you relate even in your romantic relationships in future.
Yes.
And that is why this conversation really need to start early, because it covers all those diverse aspects.
Yeah.
So for example, it will cover aspects around my boundaries. It, yes, will cover aspects around my, yeah, my self-image, because self-image is again a big issue. We know a lot of sexual choices are based on how people feel.
Yes.
That's, and so we have to anchor into that. Self-esteem is something that we build at home.
Yes.
We don't teach children about self-esteem, but we model and we give them the environment that gives them the self-esteem.
Yes.
We have to teach children about being cautious of their body. So we are not saying that children need to take care of themselves, but we are empowering them just to be alert around issues around protections.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for example, we know that the common age of sexual abuse is the age of 7.
Wow.
And we statistically know that the average age of reporting is 53 years.
Wow.
Yes. So it means then that the majority of children who are molested when they're young, some die never speaking about it. Some never even tell people. And we know most people just tell the strangers. They never tell people within. And then the people who assault children, 90% are people who know children, not strangers. People they know, people they see, some they love, some they engage with every day, 90%. And so that is why conversations around safety and protection is also one key aspect of sexuality conversation. And then, of course, then you have the normal growth that you go through, which then bring the conversations around the puberty years.
Mm-hmm.
Because my body changes, I'm changing to mimic that of an adult body. I, mm-hmm, need to understand, I'm a child.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to understand what that means for me. So I need to understand all these changes. And it happens, all of them just happen suddenly.
Yeah.
Because human beings, we don't stop growing. But it's only that in puberty years, it's a very rushed growth.
Okay.
And so, of course, the mind of the child, they are going through identity crises because there's new being happening,
yeah,
that they don't understand about. And, yeah, they need to be guided through what that is. That, yeah, brings the conversations around puberty conversation. As sexuality educators, we usually say we are so ashamed that most parents assume that teaching children about the puberty is the only sex conversation that human beings need to have.
Mm.
But that is just part of it. And then, of course, then these children transition because now they're changing, they're making adults.
Yeah.
They'll start experiencing sexual urges. They'll start experiencing different kind of relationships.
Yeah.
They're growing. They may feel attracted to each other. Some may not feel that attracted, but they're seeing the relationship around them.
Mm-hmm.
That brings in the next conversation on them. How do you relate into the next chapter?
Yeah.
What does that mean like? What does that look like? How do you protect yourself as you navigate that?
Mm.
And so it brings the issues around conversations, around dating, around making healthy choices. It brings conversations around sexual intercourse itself, because mm-hmm. you have to talk about it then. Because once these children start having those feelings or seeing the people around them having those feelings, then you need to start speaking about that.
Yeah.
And of course, there are then issues around sexual consent. And by the way, consent education doesn't start as sexual consent.
It starts consent, as boundaries.
It starts as basic permission.
Yeah.
Non-sexual.
Yeah.
But now as they grow, of course, we have to talk about the what does sexual consent mean?
Mm.
What does the law say about sexual consent? Because we have the law that also governs that.
Yeah.
And also children need to understand that. So, and then of course, then you have this person transitioning into young adulthood. Of course, they're stepping into the relationships. They need to know what is healthy relationship, which you need to start talking about early.
Yes.
But then just continue with what does that relationship as an adult look like? So this whole range of scope cannot be done in one day.
Yeah.
Cannot be done in one sitting. And that is why we say that sex education has really changed. It is no longer the talk.
Mm-hmm.
It is a million one-minute conversations.
Yes.
Because then you are speaking about life.
Yeah.
And you're speaking about it through the different faces. So that is what, in a nutshell, sex education really looks like for the different faces of life.
That's amazing. I know for me personally, you know, I also wasn't aware that sex ed encompassed so much and there was so much conversation to be had. You know, even for me, it was one of those things where I was like, it's the talk. And I've always been like, how now do I have the talk with my kids?
Yeah.
So even that, when I came and listened to you and I just understood that there's just so much that I can be doing with my kids. And for me, it started with, firstly, they need to know the correct words for their anatomy.
Yes.
I really am not under the belief that everyone should call it like, I don't know, hoo-hoo and whatever.
Mm.
You know, like it's a body part just like anything else.
Exactly.
There's no shame around it. I feel like for me, it was like removing that shame around anything to do with their bodies was really important for me and still is. But even though I'm so confident in what I know I want to educate my kids or how I want to educate them, it's still such like an embarrassing conversation for me to have. And you know, my kids are, you know, as you're saying, they're not only learning from me, they're learning from external sources.
Yeah.
So sometimes they'll ask me a question. Like the other day, I was asked a very embarrassing question. And I, you know, to me it was embarrassing. And I tried to calm myself down and just say, I need to have this conversation with you another day. Let me go and research. In fact, like my kids were asking how she was made specifically, and she knew, so she asked me specifically, is that how you and Dada made me? And I was like, I need to have this discussion with you another day. Yeah, I was like, we'll discuss it tomorrow, because I didn't want to explode, but I also didn't want to, I didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And she said, no, just tell me, you know, is it how you made me or not, you know?
Yeah,
and I,
yeah.
You know, but it's still so embarrassing as much as I want to my kids to know. So they know about, you know, your period. They know about, I mean, even my daughter's two will know that. She knows all the correct words for her anatomy. But then again, when she says a word in front of other people,
you feel weird.
You
as
feel
a parent.
Very weird because you know, I even try and explain to them, you know, this is, it's normal and you shouldn't be shy. You shouldn't be ashamed. But there are people within Kenya that might not appreciate you saying it that way. And I also don't like having that conversation with my kids, because at the end of the day, I don't want them to feel bad about talking about their themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it's a strange place as a parent to navigate, which is why I appreciate having these conversations. And I know one of the, as I was saying, the only relationship with children I have is between now and a seven-year-old.
Yes.
So for me, I would love to know, how do you start that conversation? As you said, it's body boundaries. Maybe we can talk about what does body boundaries look like? Is that good touch, bad touch? How do you have that conversation?
So as you say, it starts with, the basic, which is really around calling the body, then they are not the right body parts names.
Yeah.
And so we tell parents that we need to live in an age where you stop telling children, tabia mbaya, you know, that's bad.
Yeah.
The way is when maybe a child comes and say, oh, my penis or my vagina. Then like, that's a bad word.
Yeah.
Because it's for parents, we understand, because we were brought that way. So we are brought in a shame culture.
Yeah.
And remember, our shame culture was really stemmed by HIV/AIDS.
Yeah.
That was why we were put in that cocoon. And so it's realizing that, you know what, my vagina is the same as me, like my nose.
Yeah.
There's nothing sexual about me mentioning that word.
Yeah.
The only reason why you feel it's sexual is because you only imagine that the only function of a vagina is for sex.
Yes.
But there are very different functions that these body parts have.
Yeah.
And so giving children that grace, even in extending that into schools, where they don't have to be told that they are doing bad by calling it out their names.
Yeah.
So an approach a parent can use is just telling a parent of telling a child as you teach them, is this is the right word. And the function, not just the name, and the function.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've seen in abuse, people may mislead children, for example, saying, in terms of even oral sexual abuse, putting children to have oral sex with them and telling them, like, this is like breast. Like sucking up, my penis is like sucking a breast. So you need to teach name and function.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also important to tell the children so that they also don't feel off, is that sometimes you'll go outside the world, people may call it different names because of their comfortability levels.
Yes.
This is the right name. This is the function. But outside, some people call it this. So don't feel weird when you also listen to people call it those different names.
Yeah.
So that you're also transitioning your child into this world where, of course, we cannot all be at the same space as parents.
Yes.
But allowing that child the grace to know that I will navigate the world and I will encounter it differently.
Yes.
And it's still okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are handling the shame around sexuality differently.
Yes.
And of course, then you transition into boundaries around the bodies as you teach.
Yeah.
Now, boundaries has also to be not just taught, but modeled.
Yeah.
So when you teach it, of course, it's teaching it the child that the body is their private part. We no longer teach that this is a private part.
Your entire body
is a private part.
Okay.
And the reason being, people who molest children don't start by touching the private parts.
Mm.
They start by touching the neck, the outside parts. Then they proceed then into those parts. So when you give that child the power to know that their body is a private part, then they know they have the control over that body part. Mm. Their entire body is their private part.
Mm.
That is a reframe that we've done into the abuse protection conversation. Even the mouth, because we know sometimes the songs where they teach and then they say, oh, this is my private part.
Mm.
But then you forget the mouth. But you know there's a lot of oral sexual abuse happening.
Mm.
So the mouth is an open part, but it's a very private part. And we need to empower children to know that. And then, of course, as you teach about those private parts, you also model it. How do you model? So, for example, if you started teaching a child about the private parts, then things like even bathing of the children, you now need to give them that role so that you then don't conflict. You're teaching about private parts, but then they're being, the bathing and showering is being supported by everybody and everybody walks into that home.
Mm-hmm.
You are creating a conflict of messaging to this child. Children learn more through actions, not through what you say.
Yes.
So you need to match what you say.
Yes.
And then, of course, as you teach them about their own private parts, it's also teaching them that they also need to respect others. Because you are raising a global citizen. It is not just about them again.
Yeah.
And we are living in a space where abuse is also beyond touch. So we also need to emphasize about taking of photographs, emphasizing those parts. Very important.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Because some people, abuse is not only when you're touched, sometimes you're also made photography. You're also made to watch pornography, which is still sexual abuse. So you need to candidly speak about that. And then, of course, progressing into the next stage where you now start introducing the growth and change that a child experiences even before they experience it. We know there's a change in the ages in which children are starting puberty.
Yeah.
So we've now even seen girls at 9 years menstruating.
Wow.
Now, I want parents who are watching this to listen carefully. By the time a child starts menstruating, it means that then they started puberty 2 to 3 years before.
Okay.
So if a child started menstruating at 9, they started puberty at what age?
6.
Yeah. Or 7.
Wow.
Yes, because the first change is not menstruation. Menstruation is actually the last change before now the height for girls. So they've started way early.
Wow.
So the first phase is usually the emotional change, where you'll find children change, they're very moody. And that is the phase where puberty really starts. It starts with emotions.
Okay.
It doesn't start because the brain is wiring everything around. So it starts with emotions.
Okay.
So by the time you see the breast budding, this child has already started puberty. And so we need to start conversations about things like menstruations or voice breaking or wet dreams that the boys will experience way early before they experience them.
Yeah.
And the beauty about having those conversations early is then they don't become awkward.
Yes, exactly.
There's no shame. I've not started experiencing. So it's a conversation that's happening. So it's very free. Unless you, it's not like when you wait for them and then it becomes very icky. Maybe the child doesn't even want to share. They're even ashamed. They didn't even know how to do it. They've gone through it.
Yeah.
And so just remember that it's preparing, puberty conversation is preparing the child to have, to handle puberty itself.
Yeah.
So you need to do it early.
Hey guys, I'm at Ashley Furniture Home Store and I'm here to check out a few pieces from my home. I'm looking for something child friendly, pet friendly, and all around comfy on the pocket. And yeah, I really love the furniture here at Ashley. So why don't you come and have a look around with me? Because I absolutely love these seats. The fabric, the pattern, it also feels so soft. I absolutely love them. And in my ideal world, I'd have like this sophisticated home, like office space with these couches, this painting. In fact, like this entire setup is exactly what I'd want for my, like my home office space. And have you guys experienced the Ashley mattresses and pillows? Honestly, there's no better quality sleep than on an Ashley mattress. And have you seen all the amazing furniture they have as well? Bedside tables, bedding, you know, the backboards, everything. It's actually really gorgeous furniture. If you're looking for a bed, this is where you should come. What a gorgeous dining room table. Honestly, if I had space for a dining room table in my home, this would be it. This entire setup is just so pretty. I love it so much. And I could definitely see myself like, you know, hosting guests with these little cute like bowls and mugs. Absolutely love it. What do you guys think about this table?
So once you've done the boundary conversations, mm-hmm. which is boundary privacy, but privacy and sexual abuse conversation,
mm-hmm.
Then you transition into preparing this child for puberty.
Yeah.
And so transitioning into puberty is for us to have the conversation before a child enters puberty.
Yeah.
So then they're prepared as it starts. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we usually wait till late to have this puberty conversation.
Yeah.
I say in Kenya, we do it too late for a child. We do a post-dated puberty conversation.
Yeah.
But it needs to be a pre-dated puberty conversation. So we've seen an age change for children. Where nowadays, for example, in girls, we've seen a number starting menstruating at 9 years. And by the time a child starts menstruating, it means they've started puberty 2 to 3 years before.
Mm.
So if a child started menstruating at 9.
6 is when they started puberty.
Yes. Mm. Or 7. That's quite early. So it therefore tells you how early we need to be starting this conversation.
Yeah.
And it needs to be very layered. So that you take this child through the process of puberty itself.
Mm.
Conversations around menses, around hygiene, around the change they experience. Even for the boys, conversations around erections, voice breaking. We need to have all this conversation before they head into that conversation. Yeah. It also reduces identity crisis
mm-hmm.
when they understand what they're going through. And then they stop comparing themselves with the entire world around them.
Yes.
That is going through puberty.
Yeah.
It also makes your child more empathetic. So we stop having bullies in school or bullying children who are going through puberty because they're slightly different from them.
Yeah.
And that is why as parents we need to have this conversation early puberty itself.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, do you know why a lot of us are quite, I mean, I understand, you know, that maybe the sex conversation, why that might be a little bit, you know, embarrassing, but I have had conversations with even friends of mine who have never had a conversation with their children around periods.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like one of the most natural, it's never been something for me that's been embarrassing because, and my kids know, even my 2-year-old will be like, the other day she's like, Mama, I need a pad, I have my period.
Yeah.
This is a 2-year-old speaking, you know? Yeah. And it's like, it's such a natural conversation to have. However, I've had friends who even have 9-year-olds who have never had that conversation because, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, yeah, I guess we just don't know how to do it. So why is it that we're so...
It's how we were brought up.
Yeah.
Because it's everything was made so shameful.
Yeah.
And we also live in cultures where period is still considered unclean.
Mm.
And so it's for a parent to break from that cycle, they have to work on themselves. And therefore, that's why we say sex education doesn't start with the child, it starts with the parents.
Yeah.
Because I have to break the shame around how I view sexuality
mm.
for me then to come into open space.
Yeah.
Anything that is covered under shame, you can never have a conversation around it.
Yeah.
So I have to unshame myself. And so it's also as a parent, just stepping back and asking myself, what was that shame language around me?
Yeah.
And was it even correct? And part of unshaming yourself is when you know the correct information, then you can say, oh, those were not facts.
Yeah.
Are not facts at all. Even for those that are correct, what's the perspective towards it?
Yes.
What was the intention? What was the goal around that? And I think that's why most parents really have that shame around it.
Yeah.
And so it's also trying to bring a culture where we unshame these things. As you say, it even for me in my house, I live in a house where even my boys, I don't hide my hygiene products.
Yes.
I never hide them because it's a natural process.
Yeah.
And people need to know that people go through them.
Mm-hmm.
So even my boys will look at that pad and they'll be like, oh, that's, they will not, and I don't call it a diaper, it's an adult diaper. No, it's a pad. And that's the function. Because sometimes even we lie to children, these are like, it's like an
adult diaper.
It's not an adult diaper. Just define it. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong about this, and there's nothing clean about menstruating. In fact, menstruation is one of the richest blood, because if you were pregnant, it would have like given life to a human being.
Yes.
So it is one of the richest blood that any human being releases, because it was a home for an unborn child. And when you start looking at like that from that angle, then you start respecting your menses more.
That's exactly what I've told my kids, actually. That's how I try and describe what it is. It's it was going to be a home, and then you know, the home is now coming out and then we're building, your body's now building a new home for a baby that you might have. And what was I going to ask you about? I was going to say, you know, one of the conversations also that I'm surrounding my kids is also the fact that pregnancy, in, you know, being able to teach my kids about, once you start having your period, you're able to get pregnant.
Yes.
So then I guess that's the next also conversation. That's because even my kids ask me, that, when I get my period, can I have my baby? Because they really want kids for some reason. Obviously, they're small, they're tiny. So they're like, oh my gosh, as soon as we get our period. So then now that's the next conversation of, well, actually, you need to have a partner. And I'm also trying to steer clear of, you need to be in love and fall in love with a guy and, like, you know, yeah, that's the ideal situation. But I mean, it could happen in any way. So I guess that would be...
Yes. So the next transition, after they've understood what they're going through, is of course what sexual intercourse is, how a pregnancy can be made, what that looks like, how every other things that come in between the STIs conversation and all that. So that means you are then transitioning into now a teenage conversation.
Because
preteen, you've spoken about puberty and protect themselves. Now they need to understand that this is now the new phase. You're like an adult.
Yeah.
And it even includes conversations around crashes.
Yes.
And they may experience crashes. I know most of the time children are really like, when they try to mention anything, they're literally shut down.
Yeah.
But a child saying that I have a crush does not mean that they want to have sex.
Mm.
They're literally explaining what they're going through.
Yes.
And so it's you as a parent to navigate them into that situation that where they understand what's the difference between a crush, what's the difference between love, what's the difference between all these things, so that then they understand what is healthy relationship, what is not healthy relationship, how can they navigate that, how do they choose to wait, what makes them choose to wait. Because you see, the assumption is that when I talk to my child about sex, I'm telling them to go and have sex. But when I empower that child to reflect, how do I make the choice, even if I don't make it today, when I make that choice to have my first sex, what will make me make that choice? And those are the conversations that you really need to surround yourself as you talk about the dating period, as you talk about healthy relationship, as you talk about sexual intercourse itself, the impacts of sexual intercourse. I know in our generation, we lived in the generation of HIV/AIDS when it was really high. So we were being scared, most of us, on AIDS and pregnancy, which now I tell parents does not work because... ARVs have shown the generation that they can live long, so you can no longer play those tactics. So you need to have candid conversation. And you also don't need to scare children around STIs, because we've seen children who have infections that can be treated, but then they go silent
because they don't want to be embarrassed.
They've been so scared. So it's also telling these children that of course there are STIs that are not curable. Have that conversation. That those that are curable, in case one made a mistake, they slid, they can get the remedy for that. But it's just having that a whole perspective conversation. And when you speak about it from a perspective of life, not from warning, it becomes very interesting, because we are talking about life. I give people my experience. How did I even become a sexuality educator? My father, who died when I was just 14, started having for having with us conversations about relationship when we were just like 7 years.
Wow.
In fact, I tell people in our evening table every day it was conversations around relationship and what healthy relationship looks like.
Wow.
What is dating? Yeah. How do you present yourself in a dating space?
Yeah.
We'll even take us out for lunch and say when a guy takes you out, you don't order chips and cuckoo. Those are for cheap girls. We were very young. Yeah. I had not even reached puberty. Now that man died when I was just 14 years.
Mm.
But even how I made my choices to even choose my life partner now was based on the conversation that I had with my father.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And he was that generation of a man who will now be 90 years old. He was not a young man.
Mm.
He will be 90 now. So he had gone ahead of his age. He had empowered us and we used that information. So it's looking at it from that perspective. Yes.
Yeah.
Of it's about life.
Yeah.
It's about surrounding these children with how they'll know the choices. So that then they don't cry. Nobody taught me what a healthy relationship is.
Yeah.
I didn't even understand what love is. What is love?
Yeah.
So like when you even talk with a child, what does love mean?
Yeah.
What is lust? So that they know, so that when they grow, they really know they come from a very informed space.
Yes.
The what I'm experiencing is not love.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for dating because of 1, 2, 3.
Mm-hmm.
And I can pause and it's okay. And I may be different from all the other people. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm not weird because I'm different.
Yeah.
But then they start making choices based on values.
Amazing.
And their own fundamentals, not on other people, because they've understood. Because it's not scaring that. You say, I tell people that rules is also not education. So telling your child, don't get pregnant, is not sex education.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are so many ways of not getting pregnant. For example, I can have anal sex.
Mm-hmm.
I can go buy P2.
Mm-hmm.
I can do all this. I can do abortion.
Yeah.
I will not get pregnant. But you've not given me the basic conversation.
Yeah.
But when now we talk about why should I even make the choice to be pregnant in the first place, then you've made me think about why I need to make decisions.
Yes.
And so sex education is building critical thinking skills, because when children make choices about sex, as a parent, you will never be there.
Yeah.
But we are hoping that the information we give them will help them make better choices. If maybe as a parent I failed, they make better choices than I ever made.
I love that. I love just the whole idea of we're empowering our children to make the best decisions that they can. That's amazing. I mean, to me, that's very comforting.
Yes.
As much as, you know, having these conversations is still a bit weird for me.
Yes.
Just knowing that outcome, or just having the thought that I'm really empowering my three girls to, you know, make informed decisions is a very comforting thought.
Yes.
And I think one thing I've also learned through this sex ed journey is that parents, like adults, really, we are the ones that over-sexualize everything. So everything they're saying, they're literally just curious about the world. They're trying to learn.
Yes.
Mama, what's this? Or whatever they're doing.
Exactly.
Or we had a talk once where a parent was describing how their kid touches themselves. And, you know, for her, it's like she's over-sexualized it. And when you're talking to a doctor, this is normal development for a child their age.
Yeah.
So it's us as adults who are just over-sexualizing their entire...
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think one...
And that is why it's important when you even answer questions, when children ask you questions, because sometimes they do. If you're lucky, if you have the children who ask questions, is also pausing and asking them from their perspective so that you also know how to answer.
Yes.
Because sometimes your assumption as adults is very, very weird.
Yeah.
Like they may be innocently asking about pregnancy question, asking about dating question, because maybe they've even seen their friends experience it. They just want to understand.
Yeah.
And so when you pause and ask from their perspective, or what does that mean to you?
Yeah.
Or you want me to explain in what context?
Yes.
You understand what they mean. And also when you answer, just ensure that you ask if they feel they've been answered.
Mm-hmm.
So that then it's a communication. It's not you giving down the rules, because sometimes our perspective can be very different. I may see a 6, they may see a 9.
Yeah.
So I need to understand what they see so that then I can answer them from that perspective. And the rule of also sex education is if a child asks a question, they're ready for an answer, because it means they've been exposed to that.
Yeah.
So you cannot hide an exposure that has already happened.
And they can either hear it from you or hear it from...
Yes. And what I also tell parents is, because sometimes you want to protect children and say, I want to protect their innocence. Innocence is a choice made out of informed decision.
Wow, I love that.
Innocence
is a choice
made out of informed decision. It's not the secrecy that makes people innocent.
Yes.
I choose to be innocent. I choose not to do because I'm informed and I've made an informed decision. And as a parent, when you come, when you use that as your basis, then you know that empowering this child does not break their innocence.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it makes it easier and better for them to make better decisions and better choices.
Wow.
So looking at it from that angle is very important for parents. And also, as you put it, it's try to understand their world, because also how we experience sexuality now is very different from how children experience sexuality. Mm,
it's based on our experience of life.
Yes. Yeah. And you see, their life is different. For example, children now have things like there's the internet, so there's phone sex, the sending of nudes, there's that perspective, there's a comparison of self-image constantly on the internet. So their perspective of sexuality, as much as we have still the same grounding, is very different. So you need to, as a parent, also pause and understand what is that coming from.
Yes.
But then, because you can't advise what you haven't understood. And then now try to engage them and look at what that means for them. So have conversations with children.
Yeah.
Don't have lectures.
Yes.
Because when you talk to a person, they sit and understand. When you lecture a person, probably your ears shut. Even you as an adult.
Yeah.
When somebody starts lecturing you, your ears are shut.
Yeah.
So I may be watching, but I'm listening.
Yeah.
But when I have conversation, it's different because I'm getting perspective.
Mm.
Yes, we are not saying don't bring your values into sex ed.
Mm-hmm.
I want to emphasize that. Nobody's saying don't bring your values into sex ed.
Mm.
It's very important because part of your values is what makes children see, okay, why does this make this decision and this one doesn't make a decision?
Yes.
But then it's they have a better understanding around what that really entails.
Wow.
So I give even a parent, for example, this conversation. If I have teenagers, I will not say don't have casual sex.
Mm.
I'll say I don't engage in casual sex because for me, sex has to be very meaningful and it has to be in a very connected relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So these children understand it's not a rule of not having casual sex, but why are we not having it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Why is early pregnancy then a big issue?
Yeah.
Then have that conversation. Why, even if you're a parent who still believes in sex only in marriage, what does that look like?
Yeah.
Talk about the entire aspect behind it, so that then they make decision based on values and not on your rules.
That is amazing.
Yes.
Honestly, I am learning as we go. I think as you're talking about early, you know, developing early and things like that, you know, I'm nervous about my girls going into the world and facing, you know, as you're talking about the stats on the stats that you've given today is pretty shocking, and my daughter's seven.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to be able to gain this knowledge from you. And do you think that you've been able to have easy conversations with your kids because of all this knowledge that's happened, or was it also difficult for you at the
beginning? For me, it was easy because we had it.
Yeah, your dad. Yeah.
My dad broke
the
shame for us.
Yeah.
But I tell people I have very different parents. My dad openly spoke. My mom was the very
quiet,
reserved one.
Mm.
Like if I mention sex now, she will literally run away still
at
her age. But then that is why I understand even the struggles that parents have, because I was raised by two such parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so how you break it, as I've put it, is break it first for yourself. Sit down and see what makes sexuality so hard for me.
Mm.
And then give yourself grace as you go through the process.
Yes.
The first conversation, if you've never had it, of course will be weird.
Yeah.
Can never be any difficult conversation.
Yeah.
Will be weird when you press it on.
Yeah.
But the more you do it, the more it gets easier.
Yes.
And then the beauty when you look at it is, I don't have to start sex ed from sexual intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
Makes it even easier.
Yeah.
Because then I'm speaking about things around, then I can introduce, I can talk about sexual intercourse, of course, when the comfort level, so as you introduce different levels, your comfort levels increases.
Yes.
So don't wait for you to feel comfortable. You'll never feel comfortable, by the way.
Yeah.
You just need to brace it on, start the small conversations. When you start them before they happen, it's way easy. When, for example, you talk to your child about puberty before they reach puberty, it's easy. When you start talking about dating before somebody dates, it's quite easier. So the earlier you start, the better for you. And then, of course, those parents were like, oh, my God, my children has passed teenage. I've never spoken now.
Yes.
Am I too late? You're not too late. The only late conversation is one that has never been had.
Mm.
And so starting from the point of grace and telling yourself and also telling the child that I'm coming with, I want to be different.
Yes.
I've never had the conflict. Just be open and say,
honest with your kids.
Be honest and say, you know what? I've really struggled this one. And even compare yourself with the years. Just tell them the story of even how difficult it was for you when you're growing up.
Yeah.
But I want to change. And I want us to have this conversation because life happens. And I'm coming as a person who wants to learn with you.
Mm.
Those children will extend for you the grace to learn and walk with them.
Yeah.
So it's also to tell that parent who's never had this, don't feel so bad because you had your own struggles.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up. There's an opportunity to also change the dynamics, but start with honesty.
Yeah.
And come with that openness.
Yeah. I love that. And I think that goes for everything within parenting, right? Just lead with honesty. And I think lead our kids honesty. Really, they really appreciate that more than we think they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. And I guess my final question for you would be, do you have any regrets regarding your either sex ed conversations with your kids or just your parenting journey in general? Like, what are there some regrets or things that you'd wish you had, things you wish you did differently?
I think for me, sometimes what I really struggle with is mommy guilt.
Yeah.
In that, finding that balance between doing things and even having conversations and even creating time to have them. Because sometimes you find you're on this career path, you're trying to do this, it takes up some bit of your time.
Yeah.
And so that guilt never ends. But I think sometimes it just, I have this practice. Sometimes I just come to my children and tell them, how have I failed you this month?
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they literally like, it needs you to go when you're really sober and know that you will be punched.
Okay.
Like, words will literally punch you. But what it does, it gives them the grace to see that mommy is a human being and she can mess up. And she's ready to redo it. So when I ask them, how have I failed you as a mother this month? They literally tell me. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you want to say, okay, these children are not appreciating that I'm doing this. But then you pause because you've allowed them the free space to give you feedback.
Yeah.
I tell myself the way I'd walk into an organization and want feedback about my organization, it's the same way I want feedback from these children.
That's amazing.
And so they give it to me. And that is part of how I try to also handle part of my mom guilt.
Yeah.
And even where I failed, because you can never, there's no 100% perfection in parenting.
There's nothing
like that. Even in sex ed, there's no 100% perfection in it.
Yeah.
Like even just two days ago, I was like, oh my God, I've taken so long to speak with my child around issues around sexuality and things like that. But then it's just coming up and saying, you know what? This month I messed up. We never had this. But this next month, I will put this effort in 1, 2, 3. But just make sure that what you commit to doing you try to do it.
Yeah.
So don't overcommit when you can't meet it.
Yeah.
And also just, I like our parents who raised us. I think I do apologize a lot to my children when I make mistakes.
Same.
Because I'm human.
Yeah.
And I'm also teaching them that it's okay to fail and it's okay to ask for forgiveness where you've messed up.
Yeah. And I think like you even spoke about earlier, you know, they don't learn by you saying, they learn by you doing.
Yes.
So as much as, you know, we want our kids to be apologetic when they do something wrong, how are they going to do that if we can't even do that ourselves?
Yeah.
I think that's so important as well. And I also make it a point to apologize. However, what I don't do is ask them what I've done wrong within the month. I don't know if I'm ready for that conversation, but I really feel like I want to start introducing. I need to introduce it because I think that's also a really great way to connect. I think it will be really, as you're saying, like it will be really hard to hear. I just have to sit there and like grin and bear it and then go away. But I think it's something that I would really love to introduce. So thank you for that. I actually am going to do that with my kids after all of this, you know, after when I'm settled.
You can try in small bits. Maybe you do it once in maybe quarterly, or you can do it once in a year. You can start
small
because you'll be hit.
Let's see how the first one goes.
It stings because they will tell you the honest truth.
Yeah,
it stings, but then you give yourself that grace and then try use, because sometimes I find that we also assume the needs that our children have.
Yes, true.
But there's sometimes the needs that they have are very different.
Yeah,
and you may be thinking so complex.
Yeah,
and sometimes what children want is so basic.
Yeah.
And all it takes is to ask.
You're right. Yeah. We just don't like to hear what we're doing wrong. Because as you said, it's one of those things where we start feeling you don't appreciate. Because I know I felt like that before.
Yeah.
My daughter will complain about something, or my daughters, and I'm like, you have no idea how much I'm doing for you. But obviously they're not they're not attacking me on my whole mothering thing. It's just that this one comment of something they don't like. Yeah, they're giving me feedback.
They're giving you feedback.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow. Mm. Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate it. In fact, yes. I've learned so much during this chat as well. Every time I have a meeting with you, I just feel like I'm learning so much. So I really appreciate this so much.
It was a pleasure having you. And thank you. This is very nice. And I hope that the parents who watch this find value in it.
Thank you. I'm sure they will. And please, I'll leave your handles down below if you could let everyone know where to find you.
Yes. So online, it's Teen Talk Table, Instagram and Facebook. Yes. And my email is also teentalktable@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. I will not share a phone contact now because I'm doing some transition.
Okay.
But they can find me through the email or the social media handles.
Okay, amazing. I'll put everything down below and then you can find her. I think these are important. I mean, I get asked all the time on my Instagram about this conversation. Mm. So I know that a lot of parents are just, they want to start these conversations, they just don't know where. Mm. So, you know, guys, I brought you somewhere to start these conversations and to, you know, some information for you. So I really hope that you go and check out her pages. And thank you so much for tuning in. I hope to see you on the next one.